Hi, and welcome to Common Denominator, straight up conversations with me, Moshe Popek. This week, resetting your relationship intentions for 2022. My guest is Dr. Lisa Paz, a clinical sex and marriage therapist. Dr. Lisa has a doctorate in clinical sexology and is a board certified sex therapist and a licensed marriage and family therapist. She's an expert in individual therapy, couples counseling, and sexual health. Hi, Dr. Lisa. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Thank you so much. So we're heading into 2022. Is it, is it typical for people to have kind of relationship resolutions at this point? And do actually people keep those resolutions?
It's interesting because you had sort of opened with this idea of intentions. And I so much prefer the word intention over resolution because I feel like resolution suggests something is broken versus just intention is like what we mean to do going forward. And I think every relationship should start, I mean, New Year's, they're a good place to take an inventory, right? To be like, here are my intentions for what I want in our relationship in this new year. So yes, I think couples should do it. And I think that this is like an exciting time to talk about what people should be focusing on and what is kind of the common denominator for relationships.
Yeah. Thank you for using that.
Listen, I'm going to use it all session long. I'm going to come back to common denominator. I think it's brilliant.
Yeah. So I think of when I think of a relationship, let's just take, for example, a marriage. When you're in a marriage, to your example, write down the intention. You know, you have a business plan the same way. It can't just be haphazard, I assume.
First of all, you and I are like on the same page and we're just getting started, Moshe. Yes, you don't do any other thing in your life without an intention and without a collaborative process. And so we shouldn't do our relationships without that. I always suggest to couples that you do sort of an individual intention sheet and then a familial or a relational one and just sort of take an inventory on like, is this still working? Is what we do in the bedroom, is what we do out of the bedroom, is the division of household responsibilities, is our finances, you know, all the stuff that contributes to relational success. Is it working? Did this past year prove successful or not? Like going forward, what do we want? And there's nothing wrong with sort of being intentional about sitting down with your partner, your life business partner, and being like, let's make sure we're on page. And I feel like start of new year is a perfect time to do it.
What do you think are the key ingredients, kind of a framework that a couple should start with? As far as
very, very open communication, no judgment, and really good listening skills. I think that the gift of really trying to hear your partner and see them new or really believe that they can show up different at different points is one of the most important things. And no judgment in the bedroom and trying not to judge out of the bedroom so that you create a space that says like, I'm your person and I'm the one that you can come to for everything. And I may not agree. I may not be into it. I may not be on board, but like 100%, I will have your back. I will never make you feel weird about it. I will never make you feel uncomfortable. Like I'm your person. And I think we don't underscore that enough for our partners.
So two things I want to focus on is that communication. I know personally I've had to intentionally work years on a correct type of communication, which is really active listening, really, yes, really internalizing. So let's talk about that. Where would someone go to try to even begin the journey of really being a good communicator?
I'm going to tell them the secret to it, right? From a therapeutic standpoint that we do in therapy that actually works really well in relationships. The best thing that you can do is interpret and reflect back what you hear your partner saying. Instead of spinning a solution or saying your thought or opinion about it, really active listening is part of just echoing back what you hear. And it's one of the most effective ways to say, I am on the same page as you. So if your partner says to you, like, I'm really frustrated with all the 10 kids and they're driving me crazy and I just feel like I'm going to pull my hair out. If you say something like, well, have you tried this? That's not active listening. If you say something like, you just can't take it. You feel like you're up to here, huh? You feel like your plate is like about to explode and full? She's like, yes, you get me. And so active listening is actually counter to, I think, what we do in business and particularly male communication, which is to provide a solution or to exchange information. Active listening is the exchange of just, I hear you, I'm going to reflect back what I hear you saying. And it makes people feel so understood.
And on, just on that point, because it really resonated when I remember hearing Oprah, she had maybe 30 years interviewing people, men, women, and children. And she said, she's like, the common denominator, right?
Yep.
Of humans is that validation of feelings, to your point. Is that valid?
That was
it truly, too. But not checking yourself, like intentionally checking yourself that you're truly validating your partner's feelings. I find that
that's
huge.
What we all want, right? I mean, we just want to feel understood. I will tell you, it's also a brilliant conflict resolution technique in long-term romantic relationships, right? And so we are always so like position oriented. Someone will say, well, I'm annoyed about this. And then the other person either tries to say that they're annoyed about something else or defend their position. And there is such a huge value in just being able to look at your partner and be like, it really pisses you off when I do that, huh? And then you just take the win right out of it. What are they going to say? They're going to keep beating the horse. You communicated, you got it, right? And so this reflection of what you hear coupled with validating their position are really two of the critical pieces to this communication that works.
Yeah.
By the way, we do it in negotiation, right? For all the business people listening, you sit down at a negotiation table, you don't just launch in. Everyone says their terms. And if you're a good negotiator, you sit down and you go, okay, let me see if I get this right. You want the lease at this amount and you want this amount of terms and this square footage. Da, 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 da. Do I have it right? And then that person says, oh, he gets me. And then you come in with why you're not going to do it or why you are, or whatever the next piece is. But you need to really communicate that you understand their needs before you're going to move to the next portion of the negotiation. And relational communication is not all that different.
And I think also on the other point that you made about judgment, I think in order to truly not judge somebody else, you have to first not judge yourself. And I know, again, for me, that was also a very long journey to not judge. I guess in my background, there's a lot of, you know, I think of the ultimate place of the world that I would love to see for humanity is neutralize all feelings of guilt, fear, shame, and trauma. If we can neutralize that, because we're humans, our way is to move forward with action. And I think that those four things in different variations stop people from productivity.
I love that. Yeah. Does it impact the way you parent?
It does. But I think that I've done a lot of work as far as really, really listening and then not judging. I have 10 children, so I have to, and all of them are different. Mm-hmm. And then my wife's different. So I have to constantly check and recheck myself, whatever they say, that I am emotionally grounded and I'm there to receive whatever they're saying with, again, no judgment.
Right. I love those four tenets that you put forth, particularly, I mean, globally, 1000%. And then more specifically, as it relates to sexuality, right? Because those four things that you named are kind of the critical pieces that interrupt people from being sexually actualized or having like a pure, honest connection with their partner, or as you started with, feeling like they're safe to not even judge themselves, but feel okay with themselves to then be the partner they want to be. So many people are raised with the messages of guilt, shame, trauma. What was the fourth one, Moshe?
So it's fear.
Fear.
Fear, guilt, shame, and trauma. Yes.
Exactly. And I mean, I can plug in probably 99% of the people that come to see me for sexual issues. I can trace it back to one of those four things, if not all four of those things.
And what do you see is kind of tools to reach true intimacy in and out of the bedroom? What do you think some of those would be?
I'm going to tell you. So at a behavioral level let's do it the opposite way. Yeah. At an intellectual level, right? It's the self-acceptance piece, which is very hard to come by. As you said, it's been years. And so self-acceptance means identifying what the initial messaging was and how it's impacted you, and then figuring out how to rewrite that script, right? And sort of how to reparent your earlier self. And then I think that there's the more actualized space of starting to put yourself out there, or the more behavioral component, right? Of doing the things that you want to do, or putting yourself out there and saying, you know what, let me see if this lands, or let me communicate to my partner that this is what I want. I talk to so many people about like fantasies or things that they want to try. And here's what I hear a lot. Oh, I could do that with a stranger, but no, I can never do that with my wife, or I could never do that with my husband. They would look at me so weird if after 10 years or 15 years or 20 years of marriage, if all of a sudden I come out with a new thing, no. But if you're in the healthiest and highest functioning sexual relationships, those are the ones where you can continuously reinvent, and where there's room to be like, I want to do this, I want to try that. Maybe your partner's game on, maybe they're like, you know what, like, it's just not for me, but cool. And so I think creating that space in a relationship is one of the tickets to healthy sexuality, non-judgment, healthy communication, breaking fear, shame, guilt, all of those things.
And I think that if you present yourself as a role model, meaning, right, you have to act first. I was always seeing many people looking expectations from the other person. So you have to do, if you want something in life, the way I see it, at least, you have to role model it yourself first and expect nothing.
Totally. Right. And really fundamentally in the bedroom, the interpretation or the word that comes to my mind as you say that is risk-taking, right?
Right.
You need to be willing to take a little bit of a risk and believe that it's okay. And believe that even if your partner doesn't bite off on whatever you're putting out there, that you're okay with it, that you're okay that you've sort of stepped up honestly. I do think that not enough relationships lay sort of this foundation or this ground rule of like, it's all fair game to suggest. I'm not committing to it. You know what I mean? You want to bring a horse and a cow? Like no commitment that I'm following through on it.
Right.
But like, put it out there, you know?
Right. And I think that, going back to that with the no judgment or the openness in the communication, it's what the other person needs. It's not actually that you go, it's because the brain seems to be a funny thing. You don't actually need to follow through like you're saying, right?
No, they need to know that it's available if they wanted to at least talk about it.
I want to ask you about having children and the challenges that it adds to a relationship. But first, a reminder, this is Common Denominator. I'm Moshe Popak, and my guest today is clinical sex and marriage therapist, Dr. Lisa Paz. If you're enjoying this episode, please subscribe on YouTube or wherever you listen to podcasts. And we'd be grateful for any 5-star ratings. Plus, we'd love to hear from you. If you have feedback about the show, send us your comments on Twitter at @mpopak. Now, back to the show. In general, I just had my 10th child, and just practical tools for people or couples married a while, and then children come to the mix. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh my God, I have so many. I have 3. You have 10, but children are children. They interrupt an intimate relationship for sure. Because if you're parenting well, you're mom and dad way more percent of the time than you are husband and wife. And I always tell couples, it's not the mom and dad that has sex. It's the husband and wife that have sex with each other. And so carving out time to step back into that identity is something that almost needs to be deliberate. And, you know, I hear so often, people come into my office, they're like, I knew we had problems when it stopped being easy. And I always think to myself, like, what in your life that you have came easy? And so parenting, right, is a beautiful journey, but it's not a hot one. There's nothing sexy about parenting, and there's nothing sexy about diapers, and there's nothing sexy about grades and sort of herding cat. I think parenting is like akin to herding cattle, right? You're just like trying to funnel them through life. And it's not where your sexuality lives, especially for women. And so I think creating deliberate time to step out of those roles and really into the husband and wife role is crucial. I am a giant fan of scheduled sex, and I promote it very readily. People hate me for it at first. Like if I could tell you how many eye rolls and like hackles go up in therapy when I say it, but here's my pushback and here's sort of my pitch for scheduled sex. If you think about the 2 highest rated places for sexual satisfaction, it's courtship and affairs. Those are the 2 places that almost 100% of the time people will tell you, oh, the sex is good. What does affair and courtship sex have in common? They're scheduled. Everybody comes to the table game on. They know what's expected. They know what's going to take place in that time. They mentally prepare. Females in particular who have to sort of be game on in their body and in their brain, they shave, they put on matching bra and panty, you know, they do the whole shtick. And so everyone comes to the table in a similar headspace. And then we start cohabitating, we get married, we have children, and we abandon this model of this like scheduled, we're all in the same headspace. And we expect this like spontaneous, we're just naturally going to be able to find each other. And it fails. It fails. And then people don't understand what to do. And then they wind up in my office. Right. But scheduled sex, and not scheduled from a place of, I can't believe we're reduced to this sterile model of scheduled sex, but scheduled in a way of like, we schedule important things and we create time and space and we look forward to it. And like we gear up, you schedule dinner reservations. And what do you do that day? You don't eat a big lunch. And maybe you look at the menu earlier to see what you're going to order. And maybe you talk about how stoked you are to sit down at that dinner table. And like, so I don't think it should be scheduled because it won't happen. Otherwise it should be scheduled like, nothing gets in the way of this awesome thing that we're looking forward to. And it also just brings everyone into the same space.
And I also think that, to your point, you know, we see like the Disney notion of romance. I want to take that and just throw it out the window because, you know, I think you said you were married like 15 years and I'm married 17 years, right?
Yep.
And it's not anything that's worth anything, to your point that you're making before, is not going to be easy, but it's a lot more emotionally fulfilling, right? And that's what I think as humans, we want to be emotionally fulfilled, right?
And connected, and we want to feel like people have our back and we want to feel like our cup is full. And I think one of the ways to do that, I'm going to circle all the way back now, is to the non-judgment piece. You know what I mean? Like the way we feel emotionally fulfilled is because we feel understood, because we feel like our needs are being met. And also, and I think you and I had talked about this when we talked prior to this meeting, is this idea of re-inventorying the marriage. You know, that like you may have to revamp the way you relate to your partner many different times during the course of a relationship. Yes. And by the way, people do this in business effortlessly. The business model that worked 10 years ago may not work 10 years later. And you got to be able to sort of re-inventory it. We don't apply those same tenets to marriage. And that's why marriage fails. You don't understand how many times I will hear people come into therapy and they'll be like, but you used to always love that. And then you'll hear the other one be like, I haven't liked that for 5 years, for 10 years. Yeah, I loved that before I had 5 kids.
Right.
Sure. But now, you know, 5 kids later, that's not really what works for me. And so I always promote to couples, you know, once a year, twice a year, sit down and really check in. Like, are your needs being met? Is this still working? New Year's is an awesome time to do that just because it's a built-in sort of like everyone's game on for a refresh button. But there's nothing wrong with like sitting down at the table and just being like, let's break it down. Like anything you need that I'm not doing and being willing to hear it, anything you want, anything you don't want, like I'm open to recalibration.
So what's your take on monogamy?
Oh, monogamy. This is such a big topic. So I think monogamy is a social construct fundamentally. And in this society, right, most of us sign up for it. Monogamy is very, very challenging. Not to say that I am against it. I subscribe to it. I'm hoping my husband subscribes to monogamy. I think that it's hard though. And this is the piece that people don't realize, that to be in a monogamous relationship year after year, decade after decade is really, really challenging. And our brain sensitizes to this person that we are with. And the reason that people cheat, or the reason that boundaries become permeable, is because those feelings that we get from someone new are really unattainable with our partner. And so I think that monogamy is hard. And if we can expectation set as such, then we will be able to lean into it more readily. And I also think that biologically, not sure if we were designed to be monogamous, but socially we signed up for it.
Right. So again, it's that conscious intention. Well, I want to thank you, Dr. Lisa. It's been really a pleasure and really informative. If people want to find out more about you, how could they do that?
The easiest way is my website, which is drlisapaz.com, or Instagram handle, which is also Dr. Lisa Paz. And from there, they can sort of figure out how to access me and things that I offer, courses, et cetera.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for listening to the Common Denominator podcast. Join us next week for another inspiring, impactful, and empowering conversation. To learn more about Moshe, head to moshepopak.com. If you enjoyed this episode, feel free to share it. And we'd be grateful if you could rate, review, and subscribe to the show.